Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is my weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related topics. But since this is my first episode of 2021, I'm going to start by saying, Happy New Year! I hope this year is healthier and happier for all of us. And to build on something I mentioned at the beginning of last week's episode, I hope that if you've decided to make a change for the better this year, whether it concerns writing or some other aspect of your life, that you achieve it. Even if it's a small change, such as adding a 10-minute walk around the block or writing a page a day, don't confuse small with insignificant. I think that a lot of times, we tend to think something's not worthy of pursuing if it's not more ambitious. For example, we might say, I'm going to write, edit, and self-publish my next novel all within 1 year. But although some of us may be capable of coming up with that kind of resolution and sticking to it, most of us won't. Either because we'll lose interest, and there's nothing wrong with that, it happens, or because events outside of our control may come up. And I've noticed from personal experience, because I've done this more times than I care to admit, if you approach a larger project with an all-or-nothing mentality, it can be really easy to abandon it the second something throws a wrench into it. But if you set a smaller, more manageable goal for yourself, something that requires only a few minutes of each day and doesn't take time or energy away from your other responsibilities, it's pretty easy to make something like that habitual, a part of your routine that becomes almost automatic. Even if you're making what you think is only a little bit of progress on a regular, if not daily, basis, after a few months, it might actually add up into something significant. For example, take writing a page a day. If you do manage to write a page every day, by the end of the year, you'll have 365 pages. Now, that just might mean you have a long first draft that you need to go back and edit the hell out of, and I intended this as a hypothetical example anyway. But hopefully, you see what I'm getting at. Sure, you may not get there as fast as you might like, but taking your time and getting there beats not getting there at all because you gave up, if you ask me. Anyway, since it's a new year, I'm going to start doing something that I first considered about halfway through season one. And it's not something I plan to do every week, but I do hope to do a number of episodes like this. I'm going to devote each of these episodes to one writer and explore a quality of their writing that I think any type of writer, regardless of genre, can learn and benefit from. Or if they've actually written an essay or other work geared toward writing, as is the case this week, I may focus on that. It's a little like what I did in my episode on the late U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg this past September, although I'm probably not going to spend a lot of time talking about the content of the writer's work. And I don't intend for these episodes to serve as mini biographies of the writers. I may include a few biographical elements here and there, but only to the extent that they may have influenced the writer's style, not because I don't think their lives and backgrounds aren't worthy of consideration. Quite the opposite. When it comes to context, I think you absolutely need to know about the type of environment a writer grew out of to truly appreciate his or her novel or story. But I think exploring writers' backgrounds and the content they choose requires a somewhat different set of skills than focusing on the techniques they use. For example, if I look at Stephen King in a future episode, Yes, I will discuss the fact that he's known primarily as a horror writer. But I'll be more likely to focus on aspects of his work that adhere to classic horror tropes, or maybe divert from them, than to explore, say, elements of his childhood that inspired him to write the majority of these books. In other words, I think an examination of the latter type requires a consideration of things like psychology and sociology, as well as writing techniques. And although I personally have a strong interest in psychology, the emphasis of this podcast is on writing techniques. But having said all that, if you listen to one of my podcast episodes that focuses on a certain writer's technique and would like to learn more about their background, I wholeheartedly encourage you to learn more about their life. You can always start with Wikipedia and then maybe go to Britannica.com, and you might even find web pages devoted not only to that author's works, but also there might be a link to their bio. So absolutely, I would encourage you, check all that stuff out. I chose the writer I'm focusing on this week, Kurt Vonnegut Jr., not only because he's one of my favorite writers, but also because it seems likely that a lot of writers are somewhat familiar with his works. His novel Slaughterhouse-Five has been assigned in a number of high school and college English classes over the years, and from my understanding, it's ended up on a number of quote-unquote censored book lists due to its profanity. And my response to that is, yay, Kurt! But even if you didn't read it in school, you may have had to read his short story, Harrison Bergeron. I know I read it a few times in middle school and high school. If you haven't read Vonnegut, though, that's perfectly okay. Hopefully, what I discuss in this episode will give you an idea of some important characteristics of his writing, and might even inspire you to check out one or more of his books. My personal favorite is Cat's Cradle, which was first published in 1963. And I'll admit, when I decided to devote an episode to Vonnegut, I wasn't sure where to begin. Genre-wise, he's damn near impossible to pin down. In an article I'm including a link to in the show notes, titled An Analysis of Kurt Vonnegut's Novels, Nasrullah Mambrel calls Vonnegut's genre quote-unquote satire early on. And it's true that Vonnegut incorporated so many instances of satire and gallows humor throughout his works that you can probably say that if one thing unites all of them, it's satire. But Mambrel also calls him, quote, part philosopher, part poet, end quote. And it's important to note that he also included sci-fi elements like time and space travel and aliens in a number of his works. You can call Slaughterhouse-Five sci-fi probably as easily as you can call it a satire. However, even though Vonnegut is known for writing fiction that kind of defied categorization, which in a way is something I think writers can look at and learn from in itself, he also readily shared a number of his views on style in his 1985 essay, How to Write with Style. That essay appeared in an anthology called How to Use the Power of the Printed Word, whose paperback version, at the time I'm putting this episode together, is selling for a whopping $987.25 on Amazon, whereas its hardcover version is selling for $5.98. I haven't figured that one out yet. Vonnegut starts his seminal essay by commenting on what Maria Popova, in her article How to Write with Style, Kurt Vonnegut's Eight Keys to the Power of the Written Word, refers to as the, quote, impersonal sterility of journalistic reporting, end quote. Which I find interesting, because Vonnegut worked as a night reporter for some time while he was attending the University of Chicago in the late 1940s. According to Vonnegut, quote, newspaper reporters and technical writers are trained to reveal almost nothing about themselves in their writing. This makes them freaks in the world of writers, since almost all of the other ink-stained wretches in that world reveal a lot about themselves to readers. We call these revelations, accidental and intentional, elements of style. End quote. As Vonnegut saw it, such revelations are probably the most important stylistic element, because they communicate to readers how much the writer knows, how interesting they find the topics they're addressing, and, perhaps most important, how much they care about their topics they're writing about. A journalist who's trained to be neutral, and that is how journalists are trained for the most part, despite the charges of bias that are frequently leveled against them, is largely not communicating this type of information to readers. And Vonnegut seemed to see this as disrespectful to readers in a way, noting that, quote, if you scribble your thoughts any which way, your reader will surely feel that you care nothing about them. They will mark you down as an egomaniac or a chowderhead, or worse, they will stop reading you, end quote. Vonnegut then addresses the 8 keys of writing with style. And not surprisingly, his first key is to, quote, find a subject you care about, end quote. Although as Vonnegut saw it, it should be one that you believe others, as well as yourself, should care about. It's important to note here that Vonnegut didn't seem to believe this subject needed to be complex, stating that, quote, a petition to the mayor about a pothole in front of your house or a love letter to the girl next door will do, end quote. This advice, I think, ties in rather nicely, not only with his next 2 keys, quote, do not ramble though, end quote, and, quote, keep it simple, end quote, but also with what I was talking about at the beginning of this episode, about how you might be more productive much of the time by setting small goals for yourself, rather than taking on ambitious projects that you're likely to abandon when something else comes up. It's probably why Vonnegut can be considered a philosopher as well as a fiction writer. Whether you're working on a book or another major life goal, if something doesn't have to be complicated, why make it that way? To impress some snob who often doesn't read or know a lot about the kind of thing you're passionate about? The 4th key is another one that's important regardless of the type of writing you do. Quote, have the guts to cut. End quote. This reminds me a little of another phrase you might have heard, which has been attributed to a number of prominent writers. Google search will show you that Stephen King and William Faulkner are among them, although the originator of the phrase actually appears to be English writer Sir Arthur Quiller Couch. Quote, murder your darlings, end quote. Here, Vonnegut, and for that matter, Quiller Couch, seem to be alluding to the fact that when you're writing, it's pretty easy to get attached to some of the stuff you're coming up with. And when you go back to edit it, you might think it's so clever that you're adamant about leaving it in the final draft, even if it doesn't move the story forward in any way. Maybe it's a bit of dialogue that you think is exceptionally witty, or an insight on life that's not directly relevant to the plot, but you feel an obligation to share it with your readers. You might even think some of this stuff is an example of your best writing. As a result, the thought of removing it might be painful to you, even if you realize its inclusion doesn't benefit the work as a whole. It's understandable if you feel this way about your writing. And I think it also ties in with Vonnegut's advice to write about what you care about, come to think of it. But being able to look it over with a critical eye and conclude that as much as you love it, it doesn't belong in the piece, is a valuable skill. It can strengthen you enormously as a writer once you develop it. Vonnegut's 5th key to writing with style is, quote, sound like yourself, end quote. He states that, quote, the writing style which is most natural for you is bound to echo the speech you heard when a child, end quote. whether you're from Indiana, like Vonnegut was, California or Boston, or Ireland for that matter. Vonnegut seems to be saying here that a writer should not only be proud of the tones, speech patterns, and regionalisms that they learned as a child, but that they should be open to these techniques rearing their heads at some point in the writing, so to speak. So, if you're trying to write something in quote-unquote standard written English, but a locution or pronunciation from the dialect you grew up hearing creeps into what you're writing, don't immediately think, oh my god, I have to take this out or I'm going to turn off some highbrow critic. Rather, Vonnegut suggests that leaving it in adds some spice to the piece. And that's a good thing. As Vonnegut notes, a lot of us may have gotten the impression from our writing teachers that the quote-unquote best writing sounds like it came from a 19th century upper-class British person. But how many of us actually hail from that type of background? William Faulkner and Cormac McCarthy definitely don't. Neither do Zora Neale Hurston or Amy Tan. I don't think Vonnegut is necessarily saying here that you shouldn't experiment. If that were the case, a writer whose first language isn't English, such as one Vonnegut mentions, Polish-born Joseph Conrad, might not bother trying to write a book in English at all. It just means, as I see it, that just because you're trying on some new garments, if you will, doesn't mean you should throw out all of the old clothes in your closet. I don't know how that works. That's just something I thought of when I was coming up with this. See? Writing reflects life. From here, Vonnegut suggests that you, quote, say what you mean to say, end quote, by which he means you should, quote, write accurately, always selecting the most effective words and relating the words to one another unambiguously, rigidly, like parts of a machine, end quote. In other words, you should strive to be understandable to your readers, rather than cause them to scratch their heads, wondering what the hell you're getting at by being vague or by throwing in too many big words, which is something I speak to a little in a recent bonus episode on my Patreon page. Granted, every once in a while a book comes along that's pretty much considered worth the read, despite the fact that it's super challenging. Such as David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest. Maybe I'll do a future episode on Infinite Jest. Somehow, tie it to writing techniques. I'm up for the challenge. But for the most part, what do you hope to accomplish by publishing something with a lot of convoluted sentences, say, or cryptic imagery? If you're thinking they'll see you as exceptionally deep and avant-garde, well, maybe they will if they're still cutting their teeth on quote-unquote real literature. But if they keep reading, it'll come to a point where they'll be like, what is this pompous ass trying to say anyway? And toss your book aside. This is not to say that you need to give everything away to the reader and never challenge them, just that you shouldn't make them work too hard for it. If you've written a few books, or even a few stories, you probably have some idea of who your audience is, what they're willing to work for, and what's likely to frustrate them. But even if you believe most of your readers are capable of understanding something you mention, don't be unwilling to throw in a bit of an explanation, just in case. Vonnegut urges us to quote-unquote pity the readers, end quote, noting that, quote, our audience requires us to be sympathetic and patient teachers, ever willing to simplify and clarify, whereas we would rather soar high above the crowd, singing like nightingales, end quote. I like that he used the word teachers there. That suggests that readers are looking to you for guidance and enlightenment. Don't be a jerk and let them down. Vonnegut ends his essay by recommending The Elements of Style by William Strunk Jr. and E.B. White for further analysis of literary style. If you've taken any writing classes, You've probably heard of this book. It's a short book that was first published around 100 years ago and is generally considered one of the most influential books in the English language. It's received some criticism in recent years for not aging all that well in the face of all the changes the English language has undergone. And I do think that's a fair criticism for a lot of classic writing texts. But plenty of contemporary writers, Stephen King among them, would probably suggest that you read it anyway. I think it's appropriate that Vonnegut mentions this book in his essay, because it suggests that even though he was a widely read writer by the time he published this essay, Vonnegut was willing to acknowledge that he didn't always have all of the answers. This, in turn, serves as a good reminder that as writers, no matter how much we publish, we need to keep open minds and remain students, always willing to learn more about our craft and improve upon it. Personally, I think if we take this approach to our writing, we continue to care about it more than we would if we took a been there, done that type of approach. As with so much else in Vonnegut's essay, this ending ties in extremely well with the rest of the piece. I hope you've enjoyed this analysis of Vonnegut's essay, and I encourage you to read it in its entirety, and to also read a few of Vonnegut's books if you haven't already. And if you have read some of his books, this might be a good opportunity to reread them. Even though none of his books are long, you'll get as much out of them content-wise as you will from a lot of books that are two or three times as long. You'll also see a unique voice and perspective in every one, even though, after analyzing how to write with style, you'll probably see that Vonnegut was able to develop that unique voice and perspective by using largely straightforward writing techniques, some of which are so basic that they're easy to take for granted. To boil it down to its simplest terms, Vonnegut's essay seems to be telling us to just be ourselves when we write, and we do need to remind ourselves of that every now and then. So, tell me what you think. Email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. And I already mentioned my Patreon page, which is at www.patreon.com/marissadf. For $3 a month, you'll get exclusive access to 2 bonus episodes per month. I plan on putting a new bonus episode up there soon, but in the meantime, there are 2 posted there that you can check out. You can also follow me on Twitter @MarissaD13 and on Instagram at www.instagram.com/MarissaDF13. And I'd really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about the show. Until next time, thanks so much for listening and for all of your feedback and support. It all means a great deal to me, and I keep it in mind when I think of ways to improve this show. Going back to what I said a few minutes ago about keeping an open mind and remaining a student, that applies just as much to making a podcast as it does to writing, or to just about everything else in life, if you think about it. And that's why I really like this quote from Vonnegut, which I'm going to leave you with. Quote, "I want to stand as close to the edge as I can without going over. Out on the edge, you see all the kinds of things you can't see from the center." End quote. Stay on the edge. But please, stay safe while you're there. And peace out.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.